The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, this is episode number 178 of the crossover podcast. Dave and Jeff along with you. I'm David Johnston from The Morning Show. Jeff Dantzler from the home team. We are moving right along here as baseball season has moved into weekend number 4. And we'll certainly go deep in the weeds on that. Georgia football practice, G-Day is next month. Actually, football practice this month and G-Day next month. And, of course, lots of golf. The first round of the Players' Championship taking place as we record this. And as we always like to remind you, spread the word for the Crossover Podcast. And you can find us in the App Store with your iPhone and Google Play with your Android. This is episode number 178, as I think I mentioned a moment ago. JD, how are you, sir?
That's great to see you, DJ. It was good to be with you on Tuesday. Nice win for the baseball team down in Statesboro. So 10-3 with David Lipscomb coming to town this weekend. And one more after that with Wofford scheduled midweek next week. And then the league is upon us, and for college baseball fans, and DJ and I have talked about this for years, it takes so long for the season to get here, but then the fastest part of the year, it seems like we go from week one to week four just like that.
Yeah.
And you know, we said it this year, that opening week, it's like, golly, before you know it, Tennessee will be here for SEC play, and sure enough, just one more weekend before the league starts.
Never had a season, never had a school year, never had anything like this, and of course, it wouldn't be something interesting if we didn't kind of make sure we're breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief. And again, this is Thursday, March 11, as we record this. Lipscomb is either in Athens or on their way. They're going to practice in Athens tonight. They'll be good to go for this weekend. They will be missing a few players, but they'll have the bulk of their team here. They didn't play last weekend. They didn't play their midweek game this week because of COVID issues, and we were worried that it might carry on into this weekend, but Coach Strickland assures us that they feel like they're good to go, and we'll be good to go. Got a little bit different look on the mound this weekend. So Luke Wagner's actually going to get the start on Friday night, and we'll see Ryan Webb Saturday and Jonathan Cannon on Sunday. And I like what the coaches are doing. They're trying to get everything situated for next week when SEC play starts. So C.J. Smith has some arm soreness, so we won't see him this weekend, but starting to get that rotation worked out for SEC play. And Coach told us this morning on the morning show that this might be the rotation for next weekend also.
And you're talking about a true freshman in that Friday night spot.
Yeah.
If that's a situation, there are few and far between that have done that. It's very difficult, but Luke Wagner's a tremendous young talent, one of those outstanding young freshman pitchers, and most of them are left-handed. But no doubt a healthy Ryan Webb and then Jonathan Cannon, both are premier prospects, getting those two guys into the flow, both at 100%, and Cannon started and pitched two innings this past Tuesday. And for Georgia to have a chance to make it to the postseason, DJ, as a captain obvious here, I mean, Webb and Cannon are going to have to be 100% and are going to have to be at their best.
Yeah, they are. And it's a lot to ask for, but that's what you come to.
That's right.
That's what you come to school for. And that's what you come to play baseball in the SEC for this kind of stuff. And I think Ryan would be the first to tell you, and so would Jonathan, that they got to come up big, and they know there's a lot of important things that people are counting on them for.
Oh, you're exactly right. And you know, and it starts this weekend. Like you said, this is the final weekend that you want to get everything into shape and pretty much know what you've got going in. And the other problem is with all the injuries, it hasn't just hit the pitching staff, but with the infield in particular.
Yeah.
George has been really banged up. My gut tells me that when we get into the teeth of SEC play, you are going to see Georgia go with a lineup that is primarily veterans there. Now, that also would include that rotation at catcher, where I think you are going to have a freshman in Fernando Gonzalez in there. And certainly you'll see some freshmen. We've seen Luke Wagner play the outfield, Cameron Guidry play on the infield. But I think for the most part, you'll see Chaney Rogers, Riley King, certainly Josh McAllister, Cole Tate, and Garrett Blaylock on the infield. And then in the outfield, again, there are some young players that can roll in there. But I think with Randon Jernigan, Ben Anderson, and Connor Tate, those veterans, that probably gives Georgia the best shot. And obviously, you need the freshmen and those young guys to come there and help you some in some spots. When you're talking about that grind, that week to week against pretty much everybody Georgia plays in the league is going to be in the top 25. And the other thing, too, when conference play starts, all the midweek games and suddenly become Clemson and Tech. So, I mean, you're just talking about top 25 foe after top 25 foe, and that's where that veteran presence has got to be at its absolute best.
Good win, though, in Statesboro on Tuesday, a team that swept Georgia last year. And you know they want to beat the Bulldogs just about as badly as anybody. And it was good to see Jonathan Cannon come out and pitch a couple of scoreless innings. And Charlie Goldstein did well in his four innings of work. Good win on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was, DJ. And there was, for what we're able to have, it was a great crowd down at Statesboro, and Georgia and Georgia Southern are great baseball rivals. They have been going a long, long ways back, and that was a big W. And just kind of thinking about the midweekers against in-state foes all on the road. You know, Georgia won at Georgia State, lost a tough one to Kennesaw State, and then beat Georgia Southern. But I think all in all, and especially when we've seen this veteran presence, and we definitely saw it with North Florida. We saw it with Evansville that opening weekend just because of only having five rounds in the draft last year. And Georgia Southern, counting the pitcher and the DH, they're 10. They had seven seniors. What was it, North Florida, did they have, what, seven seniors in a row?
They had a freshman, seven seniors, and a junior on Friday.
And then Kennesaw.
It was kind of like that all weekend.
For sure. Yeah. Georgia State returned all nine of their starters.
Yeah.
Kennesaw State had, I think it was seven seniors. And just, you know, and for us, you kind of go through, boy, I remember that name. I remember that name. Well, in any other year, most of those guys would have moved on. But something you've always pointed out is that for so many of these kids, this is far and away their best option to play baseball this year.
Right now. So come on back to school if the schools will have you, and if they won't, find one that will.
Yeah, for sure.
We see a ton of JUCO transfers and seeing, you know, like a fifth, sixth-year seniors. I keep a scorebook in my bag going all the way back to whoever the oldest player is on the team. So I've got the scorebook in my bag through 2016 this year because
Logan Moody.
Yeah, although we haven't seen him yet this year, but got the that was that was 5 years ago. The great catch,
crazy
that he made. Let's see, 6 seasons ago.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
that was
crazy.
6 seasons ago.
No,
the catch in Starkville and the drive back.
The longest 9-inning game in history.
No kidding.
Logan Moody's catch and a long drive back. That was some kind of weekend.
That was
there.
So long ago. That was at the old Duty Noble Field.
God, as you
They've
call
got
it,
a new stadium.
A fading
Bell.
Southern
fading
Bell.
Fading Southern Bell. That's what she was.
Well, they got
but
a beautiful
the new one
now.
Is... quite pretty.
It is quite pretty. And I'm going to be excited when we get into league play. But I know Coach Strickland doesn't want the guys peeking ahead. You know, it's one of those fine lines you walk, isn't it, in sports where you think, okay, we know what's coming up. We got to get prepped for that. And we got to have all our ducks in a row. But then at the same time, you got to be ready for this weekend as well. And you know you're going to get a good battle in Lipscomb. I mean, it's a private school from Nashville. They're going to have good players, as we say all the time. I don't care what the sport is, you know, football, basketball, baseball. You play somebody from the South, they're going to have a lot of good players.
Yes, they are.
A lot of them might not meet the parameters with the size or some of the tangible ingredients that go into scouting, but – it doesn't mean they're not good players. You get late bloomers, and you get those guys that have got a chip on their shoulder. And, of course, with Lipscomb, all we got to do is go back to 2008 when they put us in the loser's bracket in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and that was a rough road
That's
back.
Right.
Thankfully, we made it back and wound up winning the regional and the super regional. But you know it's going to be a tough one. And so while you are setting your sights on next weekend in league play, Georgia's got to be ready for what figures to be a tough challenge this weekend.
Well, the Bulldogs will be playing a team that hasn't played this month. So they've come off a long rest. They're fresh. They might be a few men down. But, you know, they're going to be ready to go this weekend and glad to be out of quarantine.
Yeah, I think everybody's just happy to be playing right now. We do get into it, and it's, we got to win, we got to do this, got to do that. But big picture, it was great to have a terrific crowd this past Tuesday. Even on opening day, Georgia lost, and I know coach, everybody was upset that Georgia lost, but I still felt like that was a win that day because baseball is a sport that certainly for us and in our situation that you feel like really took it on the chin with everything that happened last year. So now to be in this spot with the season in full swing, and especially as we tape today on March 11th, it was this date last year that was a Wednesday night in Statesboro when the dominoes started to fall, and the next day, March the 12th, was one of the worst days ever. So we're right at a year, and to be going good, and everything I think that Georgia's done, that the SEC has done. Yeah, there have been some hiccups, and not everything has been perfect in terms of the scheduling, but Georgia has been A-plus at the top of the list from the various programs to the athletic administration to the university as a whole. And the SEC, for what they've been able to do to really maximize the games, it's been absolutely incredible. And, you know, as we speak, the SEC basketball tournaments,
all the conference tournaments are going on. Sure. Georgia plays Missouri tonight.
Yeah.
And we weren't so sure if we were even going to see this, so it's definitely great to see.
No, it really is. You know, you take out the shenanigans at Vanderbilt, and it's really gone off without a hitch. Which also brings us to, it came out earlier today, I don't know if it went official last night, that something's going on in the world of basketball that feels like an asterisk from 1995, the year after Duke had gone to 7 Final Fours in 9 years, but Grant Hill graduated and Pete Gaudette was the interim coach that year. And for Duke, which was probably going to have its long streak of well over 20 straight years of going to the tournament. Gosh, maybe going back to then, and all of a sudden bowing out because one walk-on had it, I thought was a poor look coming out of Durham today.
They've just – it just doesn't seem like it's just been their thing this year. I don't even know how to explain it. I know it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's just kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, that was that was a – disappointing deal there. You know, everybody's had to deal with tough times and for hard times.
Hard times, Daddy.
I mean, for their women's team just to quit. You know, they went through and with the men, and but then at this point to pull the plug with the ACC tournament, I don't know. I still feel like they weren't going to make the tournament anyway. I kind of get the feel that this is like if you were losing a tennis match. 7-5, 5-1, and then you quit when it's 5-1. This is what it feels like to me. And they'll try and throw an asterisk when their tournament streak is halted this year.
Their game against Florida State goes down as an uncontested. By the way, earlier this afternoon, Kentucky's season came to an end with a 74-73 loss to Mississippi State.
Wow, that was
just a terrible year they had.
Yeah, they really did. And there was a deal there. I know North Carolina's had a decent year, and Kansas is the 2 seed in the Big 12. But at one point, Kentucky, Carolina, Duke, and Kansas were all unranked. I mean, that's just, Carolina.
Like the first time since the
early '60s or something. Yeah. I mean, just in like before Dean Smith got to Carolina. I mean, just craziness.
Doesn't make any sense.
No,
this
whole year. But hopefully now, I do hope that now we're right at a year past when all this craziness started that it's really a moving forward at this point now. And definitely, I felt it on Tuesday night. That was a great crowd down in Statesboro.
It is, and it's funny, they put the students right behind Georgia's dugout.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of good. We're going to start seeing crowds coming back. Why not get a little situation where you're dealing with it a little bit, because that's what it's going to be like. Now, Coach Strickland said, you know, it's interesting where the way it was the other night, he wasn't complaining, but when the stadium's not full, you hear every single thing. That's the thing.
Well, we've talked about that before. Any athlete or competitor would tell you when you're on the road, you'd rather play in front of a big crowd than a really small crowd, because it can be that one heckler. And I know just years, say, with the Lady Dogs, you know, you'll go on the road. Back when Mississippi State was horrible, we had one of our Final Four teams out there, and we barely pull it out by like 4 points, and Coach Landers is just losing his mind. I go, Coach, there are like 150 people in the stands. You got one bozo up there heckling. You can't get him out of your head. And it's hard to get yourself jacked up when you're used to having several thousand people in there, and you got this light crowd. But definitely for baseball, when it's a light crowd like that, there can be those one or two annoying fans that really can get in your kitchen and grind the old gears.
It's like, would you rather be shooting a free throw with everyone in the building cheering, or with it totally quiet? Would you rather be teeing off on a hole?
Sure.
With the whole crowd or everybody cheering?
Well, that's why I think, like, the example you bring up about a free throw, I'd rather have everybody yelling against you than if there's, say, 50 people in the gym and you got this one guy just like, hey, we were playing at Ole Miss, the women were a couple of years ago, and I just was about to go in the stands and strangle a guy. Fortunately, after a while, security came in and made him shoot. He would say, everybody, hey, Johnson, 22, what is shooting for? Your shoe's untied. And must have done it like 10 times. It's on January 2nd. We're playing the day after we beat Baylor in the Sugar Bowl. And after like the 15th time.
So I'm not saying he was annoying. He was certainly annoying. But what was he doing to get them to tell him to stop?
I think he was just bothering everybody in the arena. So
he just was told to stop because he was annoying.
Yes, he was annoying.
But he wasn't doing anything technically wrong.
He wasn't cussing. He was just insanely annoying. But again, if there are 8,000 people in there,
you don't hear that guy. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So, I get it, but you definitely.
The other night, I kept hearing, Guidry! Guidry!
Hey, Guidry!
Guidry!
Okay.
That one guy. Just saying Guidry over and over. And I didn't hear him say anything else.
No.
He was just saying his name, I guess.
No, I guess, you know, then at that point, that's when you kind of think of Putty in the face paint or something. Will you sit down? You're disturbing everybody.
That's fantastic. Anyway, the Dogs in Missouri play tonight in the SEC tournament and got football practice cranking up.
Yeah.
G-Day is 4 weeks from Saturday, or is it?
Yeah,
let's see. Hold on. One, two, I'm counting. Three.
I know.
Four. 5 weeks. I'm sorry. 5 weeks from Saturday.
So it's a week after the Masters.
After the Masters. So the Masters starts.
It's early.
4 weeks
year.
From today.
Correct. Yeah, it's early. And I do like the players being before. I always kind of thought getting that big event beforehand.
Yeah.
I hate the PGA being in May, but unfortunately, I wasn't consulted. Nor
they didn't
were
ask
you. But it is really neat having the players go. Unfortunately, Harris English had to pull out with an injury, but we had 10 guys in the field, 10 Georgia alums.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. And what is widely considered the deepest field for any tournament in golf.
Oh, I don't even think it's close.
Right, and because of that, and I'm not saying these other tournaments are wrong, but each one's individual. For the U.S. Open, you've got the qualifying. You've got the U.S. Amateur Champion. And for the British Open, they've got their qualifiers and the British AM Champions. The PGA has the PGA Club Pros, guys like Cutts and Joe Devaney and Don Pernow who can get in there, which is great. And the Masters, a defending champion, guys like Sandy Lyle.
Right.
Mike Weir get to come
and
back
the amateurs.
And play. Yeah, for sure. And,
yeah.
And I think it's five or six amateurs that get in there every year, which is great. Each one's great. But for this is the best pros. And what did you say? Was it, 148 of the top 150 or whatever it was are in there? So,
well, yeah, originally they said 49 of the top 50, and that wasn't counting, I guess.
Because Kepka got hurt.
Yeah, and then Hovland pulled out. He withdrew. You said Harris got hurt.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty much.
It's still the best field that you'll see all year long.
Just and not necessarily the most intriguing, because I do like the amateur angle, and I do like that, you know, you could see in the Masters, oh, my gosh, like Bernhard Langer's, you know, the front page of the leaderboard. That's great. But as far as if you're just looking at chalk and the world rankings, the Players' Championship is so strong. And, you know, this is the Tour's event. The Masters is its own entity. The USGA runs the U.S. Open. The Royal and Ancient runs the British Open. And the PGA of America runs a PGA Championship. This is the PGA Tour's big-time event. And it's a great event. And, you know, I think a couple of other things. It's got, you know, outside of Augusta, and I think you'd say Pebble Beach as well, for the courses that host an event every year, it's probably the third, if not the second most famous, and a lot of that has to do with number 17. And it's also the hard, not like predicting golf tournaments is ever easy, it's the hardest one to pick because it doesn't favor anyone. And since it went to the stadium course at Sawgrass in 1982, nobody's won more than two. You've had some of the greatest players of all time win. I mean, got guys like Tiger Woods is one, Rory McIlroy has won. You know, Fred Couples has won it. And then there will just be some names that come out of nowhere.
There will be Craig Perks winning this thing.
You have Fred Funk, who was a fine player. He sneaks in there and wins it 1 year. I mean, it is, you know, Sergio's won it. So it's you get some of the biggest names.
Paul Goitis lost in a playoff. Which, by the way, Sergio shot 65 today. Maybe if there's anyone that's starting to emerge as someone that likes this, because he's won this tournament once, he's lost it in a playoff, and he's also got another second place.
Yeah, he always plays well there, and maybe it's just the time that his game is rounding into form. And I'd like to see Sergio make another run at a major. I thought after he won the Masters in 17, we might see him, I think, sniff a British Open, but he really hasn't played that great the major since then.
Well, he missed the cut in like seven straight majors or something after
but
that.
But I get it. When it's been so long and you've been so close, when you finally get it, I'm sure there's a bit of a hangover effect, but maybe he's rounding back into form as well. But this is a great event. It's always a favorite of the springtime. And the other thing you get to, now it's warm all over the South now, but this thing in March, I mean, I've watched it many a times when it's been in the 90s, and it can get cool and windy down there as well. But the weather looks good all
weekend. Weather looks great all weekend, and hopefully it'll be a great finish on Sunday. All right, Jeff, we mentioned Georgia football, and I was told to ask you this question.
Okay.
Yesterday, Logan and Josh handled the morning show.
Okay.
And the question came up. Actually, Logan posed it to me this morning, but I definitely said I would throw it at you. After Herschel Walker.
Yes.
It's funny how many trivia questions have to be. This isn't a trivia question, by the way. This is an opinion question. Besides Herschel Walker, or after Herschel Walker, who's the second greatest Bulldog of the 80s? And the first name that came to my mind was Terry Hogue.
That would be my answer.
Okay. Good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. Hogue would be.
So let's discuss the 80s then and the second best player. If we're both in agreement on Hogue, then who's third?
That's where you get Scott Werner only played the 1 year.
Right. They mentioned Scott Werner.
You got the two kickers who wore number five.
Yep. I was going to say is Butler next.
Are right there. Freddie Gilbert, Jimmy Payne, Knox Culpepper, Tommy Thurston.
Yep.
You want to go O-line, Guy McIntyre, Wayne Radloff, Clarence Cage.
That's why we're asking who's number three.
Number 24 was really special, too, Lindsey Scott.
Yep.
He certainly, and he had the backs. You had Hampton, you had Worley, you had Henderson. There are a lot of guys there to choose from. When you think about what it meant and everything thrown in there together, probably
Butler.
I think Kevin would be hard to beat there.
I mean, he is in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And we are down to the third player of the decade.
Yeah, it's pretty strong.
How many guys that played in the 80s are in the College Football Hall of Fame? So we mentioned Werner, Herschel, Butler, Hogue.
Yeah, that's four.
Are we leaving anybody out?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because the other thing, too, like the staff. Now, I think Rex would be
on
the verge, should be. But the other thing, too, like in 80, you also had, you know, Coach Dooley, Irk Russell, and I guess it's ridiculous, he's not in the Hall of Fame, and Bill Hartman, who's also a Hall of Famer, was on that staff.
Right.
So, you know, you got a lot. Jeff Hipp was an All-American in 1980. You know, Nat Hudson, Tim Morrison, you know, all those guys. We could run through them all, but that would probably be it. Hampton was my favorite tailback after Herschel until Gurley. I thought he was the best. All due respect to Worley and Garrison Hurst and Noshon and Robert Edwards. I love all those guys. I mean, that's like asking, you know, who's your favorite SI swimsuit model? You know, it's like they're all beautiful. But you like Kathy Ireland or Elle McPherson or, you know, Rachel Hunter. But Hampton was my favorite, the way he ran. So he'd get my vote at running back. The thing with Hogue, too, was that I don't think he played at all in 80. Might have snuck in a couple special teams plays against Vandy. But he made an impact in practice leading up to the Sugar Bowl, blocking field goals. And so Coach Dooley wound up putting him on the travel squad, and he blocks a field goal against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And he shared time at Rover at 81, and then he won the job in 82 and had an incredible game on Labor Day night against Clemson. And the rest is history. Led the nation with 12 interceptions in 82, finished fifth in the Heisman balloting in 83, which was the highest for a defensive back until, I believe, Charles Woodson, when he won the Heisman in 97. And he was just another one of those guys, as we all kind of like Kevin and Rex making the kicks and Scott Werner at Clemson in the Sugar Bowl.
But it's just so weird because of that 80 signing class. You had the top of the class in Herschel and the end of the class.
Nobody recruited Hogue.
Terry Hogue.
Everybody recruited Herschel.
Yeah, yeah.
It just shows you how it goes. But those guys, the great players, they showed up big in the biggest games. And, you know, we talk about it a lot, too. I know one thing for the touchdown against Texas when John Lastinger scored. It was, you know, was he going to give to the fullback? Was he going to pitch? Was he going to keep? That was important, but not as important as where was Georgia running? Behind Guy McIntyre.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's first. If we're going to go behind our guy, that's first and foremost there. So, yeah, that was so many great plays. You know, another thing, too, when you look at Georgia's great teams and historically, you look at the defensive line. Coach, in the late 60s, you know, tell me, y'all, we had Patton and Stanfill and Greer and Billy Payne and Larry Kahn and all those great defensive linemen. And in the early 80s, there was Jimmy Payne and Meek Cleaver Weaver and Freddie Gilbert, three of the best. There are a lot of other great players, you know, Pat McShay, Tim Crow, Robert Miles, Joe Crimmins, a lot of other. But you had three of the very best that have ever played. And it's, you know, it kind of gets back to it. You know, why those two Giants teams beat the Patriots? Well, they could get to Brady without having to blitz. And,
yeah.
And Georgia's, you know, then even going through Sullivan and Pollock in the early 2000s. And, you know, Kirby had a great defensive line back in 2017. And, you know, hopefully we should have a great one this coming year, too. But that's definitely a common denominator. Most championship football teams are really good on that defensive front. And we were really, really good. We were really good everywhere. But I think Hogue would be number two.
Yeah.
And it's a darn good debate. Poor old Scott Werner, I only got to play 1 year in the 80s. So.
Well, I was starting to think if you had to basically, for guys that were playing at the end of one decade, the beginning of the other, I would say which part of your career you played the most in.
Right.
And if you were 2 years in one decade, yeah, two in the other, you'd round up.
I would agree with that.
But still for Werner, I mean, that's split hairs.
You are. And, you know, the other thing, too, again, going back to Kevin making the kicks and Hogue and the Sugar Bowl and the Tech games and the Florida games and Herschel in every game and Werner against Clemson and Notre Dame. The great players showed up big in the biggest games.
Right.
Those are the legends. Because, you know, I think baseball, it's more of a numbers game. You know the stats. In football, we know some of the stats. But you remember the guys who made the big plays. You know, nobody knows how many exact points Michael Jordan has, but you remember,
you know,
the shot against Georgetown.
Yeah.
You remember the shot to beat the Jazz. Yep. You know, the.
Well, even for like Butler, like one of his most famous field goals is one he missed.
I know.
You know, in the Citrus Bowl.
Kicked it 70 and a half yards. I asked
that would have been good from 70.
It would have been. I said, well, what did you do? He said, I told Jimmy Harrell, you tilt that thing all the way back, and I'm going to just – and he darn near almost made the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kick against BYU was so special. But, you know, those were great teams, and Herschel was just that missing piece to the puzzle.
Yep.
But, yeah, yep. So I think great minds think alike. Terry Hogue and – that gets my vote.
First one to pop in my head, and then started thinking about Kevin and just how incredible those teams were, especially in the early 80s. And it's funny because then the second half of the 80s, it was one of those, like, what could have been.
I've always thought from 85 to 88, when I kind of go back through and say wish list for Georgia wins, obviously Penn State and the three Bama games from the past decade,
yeah,
and Pitt would be there. But that 85 to 88, and plus for me, I was those years, I was 13 through 16, Coach Dealey's last 4 years. I mean, Dave, we could go through every one of those losses, those last 4 years, Coach.
Which
Dealey's,
were my, those were four of my five college years.
So you're looking at those, that could have easily been regular season only, 10-1, 10-1, 10-1, 10-1, easily. I mean, just, and that's the one where I hate that we didn't get another couple of SEC championships. You think about, you know, Alabama and Vandy and Tech in 85. And
I should have known I was getting in for something or getting into
Mike
something.
Shula.
My very first game as a student was the Bama game on Labor Day night.
Like, oh, man. Oh. Well, this is no good.
Little did I know.
And then, you know, I mean, you thought David Treadwell beating us back-to-back years, the 87 LSU game, the 88 Kentucky game. I mean, we were so close to winning three or four more championships and being in the top 10, and it just almost.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost.
But those are the years that, you know, if I could go back honestly and say have like what Georgia did 17, 18, 19, this past year was so bizarre. I don't even like to reference it.
But, I know.
And so, like, hey, if you could have picked a year to have one of those years back in history, when would it have been? What I would have given to have had like that 12-2 year in 2019 back in like 86, 87, 88. Because we were so close.
So close.
And, God, we had great tailbacks. And Pat Dye and Danny Ford were in here just stealing all our linemen. Stealing them all.
They sure were. Mm. And now they get to come back and speak to the touchdown club.
Not a fan. Not a fan.
Well, Pat Dye doesn't anymore.
No.
But he did have the man enough, so that was a pretty good one.
I think that helped in 02.
Yeah. For sure.
Isn't it crazy? That was kind of the first origins of this show. And I can remember when that happened. Like, we supplied the audio for Coach Rick. Because, you know, it wasn't like you just get on your phone and go find it.
Yeah.
I mean, we dug it up. And I don't know if we burned it on the CD or whatever, but got it to him. But it
– man enough.
And that was a monster win.
Which makes me think as we get on out of here, better than most.
Better than most.
Better than most.
All right, this is the hardest one to pick. Somebody asked me back on Monday, who wins the players? I don't know. Daniel Berger. I mean, who knows?
I know.
It's just so hard to pick one. I think for the Georgia guys, and by the time you listen to this, you know, whoever I say I'm going to jinx, they probably shot 80. Chris Kirk's played very well here, so I'm going to pick him to be the low dog this weekend.
That works for me, too. It's like I said, Kisner, I don't think he got off to a good start
today.
How
did that putt not go in? How did it not go in?
And we're talking, that was 6 years ago? 15?
Yeah, 15, I think. Okay, and that was, and Sergio was the other. It was Fowler, Kiz, and Sergio.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How did that putt not go in?
I don't know. Could be talking about a player's.
I mean, you talk about how close Kiz is to having a British Open, a PGA, and a player's.
And that year, he was in, what, three or four playoffs?
Yeah, because did Furyk beat him in the Heritage?
Furyk beat him
maybe?
At Harbortown. He lost in the Greenbrier, I think.
Yeah.
And I want to say there might have been one other one that he
– I know
that
this, though. He beat Kuchar in Austin,
yes,
Texas.
Yes, he did.
That was awesome.
And he and Kirby were in touch.
My wife was cheering for Kuchar in his semifinal. So we were going to church. And
she wanted Kuchar.
She goes, I want to see you in full, like, Georgia Tech game day mode. I'm like, are you sure about this?
Yeah, because you're about to see.
Because I guess we must have had a Thursday through Saturday baseball.
Yeah.
And I said, like, well, as soon as church is over,
we're going to watch us some match play golf.
And it's on.
Game on. That was great. That really was.
Oh,
especially when
Kuchar
had that little thing he said or whatever
it was. Oh, he's just
not your guy.
No. No.
Not your guy. You know who else isn't? Patrick Reed.
He is
not a former Georgia player.
No, that is one of it. If it was Reed and Kuchar, I'm like, just don't.
Yeah.
Do that like anti-Sophie's Choice thing, but the answer would be Kuchar. But don't throw a Tech guy or him. Like, no, you got to take the Tech guy. That's how bad it is.
Is there anyone any person that you would take over Reed?
As the worst?
Well, just like if you said you had to root for player A versus Patrick Reed, is there anyone that you would root for Reed over that player?
No.
No, that's like I can't think of anybody.
I can think of a high school football coach if he took up golf who might qualify for it, but no, I think Reed.
That'd be some good shenanigans if those two were going up against each other.
There'd be some cheating going on right there, and some lying going on right there, and but yeah, that would there'd be some shenanigans for sure. But the thing is too about Reed, I mean, the guy is
he's
really good.
He's a very good golfer.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's what you have to kind of remember sometimes. You didn't need to do all that.
No.
But then again, maybe that's what...
He likes wearing the black
hat.
Yeah,
maybe that's what motivates him. I don't know. I don't know. It's an interesting thing to look into.
Yes, it is.
And he will be at the Masters for a long time.
Ugh. That was bitter. January 8th, then April the 8th.
We also talked about this one morning that what if you just, you know, you had just a regular patron's pass. You showed up just wearing a green jacket. And you get in, or, I mean, I guess they let you in. You're walking around. People think you're a Augusta National member.
How are you? Good to see you.
Does anyone not ever try that? You never see that. I don't know. Maybe they don't think too highly of that if you try that.
I guess they've probably got a particular crest
true.
That also there's probably some like laser. Like, what's the password today?
But, you know, Joe fan that's had five or six.
Hey,
beverages.
Man, I'm a member here. Yeah,
he's not going to know.
Just throw on the green jacket there and
just roll on in like you own the place.
Down there,
I'm not saying like trying to get in anywhere, just walking around the grounds.
Yeah, if you did, just go around and start shaking people's hands. Got a cold beer and a pimento cheese sandwich. How's everybody doing today? That's fantastic.
That could be hilarious.
Well, I've always said if you wore, and Dave, we've been to a million sporting events, if you put on a coat and tie and act like you know what you're doing, I think you can get into any sporting event in the world.
A lot of things.
I really do. I think you can get into the Super Bowl. I think if you put on a suit and just, if you got there, say, early enough, just walking in down around the TV trucks, hey, how's it going?
Yep.
I can get in anywhere.
I completely agree. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Well, episode number 178.
Not that we're encouraging trespassing here.
The Crossover Podcast. Dave and Jeff along with you. And again, you can find us in the App Store with your iPhone and Google Play with your Android. Just rolling right along. Next week, we'll be gearing up for the first weekend of SEC play for Georgia baseball. We'll know who won the Players' Championship and whatever they're playing. What are they playing next week? The Honda Classic? So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess with the Heritage moving, that is...
Yes, the Heritage is always
it
after
back
the
after
Masters.
The Masters again, though, because they had moved it to June.
The match play the week after that, then the Texas Open, then the Masters,
and then the,
and
Heritage.
Then the Heritage, which is the same weekend as G-Day.
Yeah, I just blanked for a segment with the players. So that's a great tournament, too. That's one of Jack Nicklaus's. It's the move in the PGA Championship squeeze the calendar too much.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of great events. And even Kutz has talked about it some, too. Kind of after this swing in our neck of the woods, the Colonial and Byron Nelson are feeling it.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's gotten so popular, so big, every tournament wants every good player, and they can't play in every single one.
And I've always said, now, and I grew up in Statesboro, Georgia. So for me, like that, the Players and then having the Masters and the Heritage just a few weeks later, it just blows me away. Like, God, if you played the Masters, especially, what if you won? Then you get to go to Hilton Head, but you know a lot of those guys don't play that. I'm like, how could you not?
I know.
It just
seems like you'd want to just decompress and play Harbor Town.
Yeah,
that sounds like a good thing.
Absolutely.
All right, we got to go. Enjoy it, Jeff.
Got to go.
Catch you next week. But had a lot of fun here today. Look forward to the next episode of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to The Crossover on 960theref.com.